So how long have you lived here in
Ballarat.
In Ballarat?
From 95, I think. 22 years.
22 years. And where had you come from to Ballarat?
I came from Charlton to here.
Oh, really?
Do you know Charlton?
I know. Well, I know Watcham. I grew up in. I grew up at Longbenong College, which is just out of Horsham, and my first teaching school was at Watcham.
Oh, Watcham.
And I used to umpire at Charlton.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So how long did you live in Charlton?
35 years. My husband and I came there with three children, and we had two more, so we came pretty young. He was a pharmacist, and then he had bad health and he died, and the older son said, oh, we won't have to go leave, will we, you know, and so we didn't. And then eventually, I think you'll understand this statement, eventually I discovered years later that it was much further from Melbourne to Charlton than it was from Charlton to Melbourne, if you were driving. So I packed up, and it was kind of, I mean, it, you know, poor Charlton, it's in a really sad way. You know, it's falling apart, and it's never had real industry, except there was I don't know what it was up the hill. It was some, oh, I know, there was some place for rock, you know, rocks for... I don't know.
Gravel.
Gravel or something. Yeah. There was something, but it was, I think it had gone before I left there. You know what I mean? So.
And it's just a wheat area, you know, like a grain area.
Oh,
child.
Yes, it's grain, yes. But, yes, and it's very sad because it's really going to fall apart.
Yeah. It's so you moved here to Ballarat with your family?
No, I moved by myself.
By yourself?
Well, I had no choice because they'd left me.
They'd left home.
Well, you see, once they... if we'd lived on a farm, the boys might have been coming back.
Yes.
Or the girls might have come back. But that wasn't it. So they were settled in... they studied in Melbourne, all of them, and they got a bit scattered. And so they're all in Victoria now. Yeah. The eldest in Melbourne, second in Geelong, the third in Melbourne, a different part of Melbourne, the fourth in Melbourne, yeah, that's right, and the fifth in Sale.
Oh, right.
And she's been in Sale for, it's girl, boy, girl, like that. Mm. Yeah.
And what made you choose Ballarat?
Well, partly because I'd come to Ballarat for some church things. I belong to the Catholic Church. Mm. I mean, I'm not as active now, but I mean, I came for various sort of talks and things, I enjoyed learning more, kind of, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I had some friends that way, and the other thing was that a couple with the grown-up children came to Charlton long after I had, and they moved to Geelong. So I kind of would come to visit them and things, and so I thought, and the other thing was that some of the children wanted me to go to Melbourne, and I mean, I'm pleased to be in Melbourne, but I'm not sure about living there. And so I said, and then they said, oh, but you can still have a community over there. And I said, oh, well, I don't know about that. And the other thing about Ballarat is its location. Like, if you need to fly to Perth or something, you're close. Hmm. If you want a train, you go up and down on a train, or drive if you're, you know what I mean? Hmm. It's very convenient.
So what sort of community involvement did you have in Charlton? Possibly around the school?
No, not really, no. No, because I didn't have any grandchildren up there. Do you know what I mean? I didn't have anybody connected with the school. The older children had done their up to year 11, up to 11, 10, year 10, I suppose. And then they finished off in Melbourne.
Okay.
And then they went studying. And Elizabeth, the youngest one, she wasn't exactly clinging to Mum, but she didn't want to go away. So by that time there was a regional Catholic school, in the paddock, and so that was her. But it didn't put her back at all. She then got into what she wanted, mainly because she was determined. And
good, good. So what? Once you got to Ballarat, you...
I'll tell you where I went.
Mm.
I can't think what it's called now, but... Oh, sorry, can I go back a bit? Mm. My main thing in Charlton was in 1973, there were some discussions in small towns, small group discussions, you know, with people of different faiths and things, all Christians and stuff, but, you know. And from that, the middle one, there were three during the year, and the middle one was Action for World Development. And that really took up with us people. We weren't big numbers or anything. And when it finished, we decided, yes, we would make a group. You know, it was kind of justice calling, sort of, I think. And we had a minister in the Uniting Church who was a wonderful young chap. And so he and I and the Catholic priest, we made the speeches at the inaugural thing, which was packed out. Then, of course, people didn't all come. Mm-hmm. But do you know that, because I've got a good friend who's got a very sad face when I said I was moving, that little group is still going. And that was 70, we formed it in 74, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, so that was my sort of thing, and I loved it. And then, so when I got here, I sought out, I can't get the name, my power of recall is disappearing too much. It was Action Abroad. No, it wasn't. It took a new name, and it's a national body, sort of. No, international, I suppose. But it was a small group, and I just found them, and they made me most welcome. But they were all very, very much scholarly, and I said, oh, you know, like you people, very. You know whole lots of things.
They were supporting
me as a person.
Yes, and the group was what was its function? What was its
well? The main thing we did was we had book sales.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been in Ballarat? Not as far back as that. No, we had book sales, and I had a big shed, so after every second-hand book, Tom, we'd pack up what wasn't sold and we'd bring them second up.
Mm.
Then we'd take them back the next time. We didn't make a lot of money, but we also you'll probably pick up the name of the group. It also had a fundraising walk every year, and we got very tired of having orphans come to go in that walk, and the adults didn't come.
Mm.
And also by then, some of us felt, well, I don't know whether
it was all... the walk against want, is it?
That's right.
Yes.
So what's the organisation?
I can't tell you.
No, don't worry. We felt that a little group like Ballarat, which didn't make much money, just in the way, wasn't anything like the big money people in Melbourne.
Mm.
And we felt, so we packed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then... Oh, I don't know what year that was. And then in about, after the Tampa, there was a public meeting called to form a refugee group. And I heard of it and went, oh, yes, I'm really keen. I put my name down. For 12 months I did nothing. And then I suddenly wake up that I was doing nothing. So I started. And I started going to the meetings. And then a wonderful lady who still lives in, is still going in life, Ballarat, she talked one night at her experience going to detention centre, and that's what inspired me, hearing the details. And so then not everybody wanted to do it, because the detention centre chosen by Ballarat people, well, it seems crazy, was Baxter in South Australia. It seems a bit odd, but that's how it was. And so a young lady approached me and she said, look, I want to do that, sounds good. So, we'd get on all right. So two of us flew over and we got a car and we stayed in a motel. It cost us a lot of money, but, and so we visited. And then, but somehow, I don't know, I think we might have been twice. I'm not sure what happened. But then sometime later, another meeting, a lady came in and she said, "Kath, you're the only person in this room I know." Well, that was a bit, I mean, I'm not sure how. And so she said, "I want to visit detention." I thought, that's what you did. So she and I went off. Well, she and I went off lots of times. And I wouldn't drive that distance, so we'd take my car and she'd drive.
To Baxter. Okay, yep.
So that went on until they closed Baxter and they sent some of the people to Villawood in Sydney and some of the others to Maribyrnong in Melbourne. So we, because we'd made friends, because naturally you see people every month or so, you know, and you do make a friendship. And so we went to both places. She would drive all the way to Canberra.
To Sydney.
I think we had a friend a friend who gave us beds in Canberra. But it was in Sydney.
Mm.
And then after a bit, it was too much. You know, like, you can't do two things as well as you could do one better.
Better.
So that was the end of that.
Mm.
And then then we started what we called the Circle of Friends. Because when we visited Baxter, the organisation, not that we knew any people in it, but they asked you to befriend, say, this chap or that chap, and so you contributed a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
So we were quite comfortable with the word. So we called that, the group of people who were interested were quite content, but after a while they decided they weren't content. Oh, nobody knows what it is. And I said, well, doesn't everybody have a circle of friends, you know? So anyway, so then after a time, the other lady went to a different group, and so we went on with the circle of friends. And then eventually we remembered that in the original group, somebody wanted to be called Rural Australians for Refugees. So that was formed in the beginnings of our Ballarat group, not pretty much.
Mm.
And so we changed that name, and that's where we stick now.
Hmm. So how many people would be involved in the group in Ballarat?
Well, now not many. It isn't really now not many. It isn't a large group at all. I think we've probably got 8 or 9 people, and perhaps maybe a bit more in the offing, who would come to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have an event, well, I don't know about the other people, but I know that these people will all buy a ticket, and I mean, it spreads a bit.
Mm.
I mean, they don't exactly. But at the moment, I've been trying to get enlarged the group for a long time, but not that hasn't worked very well. But now there's one lady, a new lady, she's been to one meeting and she couldn't come to the second, so that's hopeful.
Mm.
There's another who did come and have a chat with me, and she wants to go to detention, and I haven't managed to arrange that yet. I'll just take her once, you know. And then we've got a young man who... some people get on to us through the RAR, which is in Bendigo, I think that's the central sort of head, and that person will give you the details if you want to go to Bendigo or Ballarat or Warrnambool or whatever, you know.
So when you visited the detention centres, what sort of experiences has that left you with, you know? And you've been a number of times, and have you become hardened by it, or are you still affected the same way?
Still affected the same way, but you don't necessarily end in tears, but you still have the same feeling. The thing was that it was a big shock. The first time was a big shock because we could hardly find the place outside the city. Can't think of the city in South Australia. And we found it anyway. And you had to go into an old house and register, yes, you were coming. And naturally, that's a worry. And then we went through a great big electric sort of thing. And then we walked across the paddock. And we went into another room and he locked the door behind us, and then we walked out and he opened the next door. Oh, terrible, you know, not good. And then eventually we came to another building. I suppose it was buildings that had been turned into some sort of accommodation. And when we came to the window, there were all these eager faces looking at us like that, you know. They're all men and not elderly by any means. And so then we got locked in a room which was about that big. And I mean, there's a big group of us, so we didn't know the other people, you know. And so then we got unlocked and we went in. And that was okay, but something I'll never forget all my life was then we had to track back. So we went into the tiny room and said goodbye, our goodbyes inside it. Even the chaps who hadn't spoken to us, they said, thank you very much for coming, thank you very much, you know.
So very appreciative.
And that's something I'll never forget either. It's the same now. When you any little thing you do, you know, anyway. So we went through the little room and then we came past the window. Oh, it was terrible. It was just terrible to see the sadness of their faces and I mean we came from a long way away. We couldn't come every week or two, you know, and things like that. So yeah, so nothing.
So are there many other visitors into these?
Yes.
Detention centres?
Well, there were, and now MITRE, which is a misnomer, MITRE, Melbourne Immigration Transit Accommodation, was set up for that purpose, but it wasn't very long that it became a detention centre, and unfortunately they haven't changed its name, but that's the closest, that's at Broadmeadows, closest to here.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, lots of things went sort of bad last year, and every couple of visits, we go every fortnight. One lady in our group goes every week, pretty much, mm-hmm. you know. And then there's another lady in our group who doesn't come to meetings nowadays, but she goes. And if there's a family who got put into a community, she'll follow them up in there. Which, I mean, we can't all do that, but that's good. So last year, every couple of visits, there'd be new laws for us and for the people inside. And I think it took a lot of people away. I mean, maybe it made it inconvenient for them. I don't know. I didn't talk to anybody who left because they're a lot, mostly Melbourne people, although some Bendigo people come there.
So what did the laws do? Like, what was the effect?
They made it harder for us to get there. They made it harder for us to manage. They made it much harder for the people inside. And the hope was, as far as I could see, that if we make it really hard, they'll just say, oh, I didn't want to go back to my country because I'll probably lose my life, but I can't stand here any longer. And that's a bit. It's very. And when we talk about a few years back, you think, oh, this is the cruelest thing we could ever see. And then, not long, and you have another one that's worse. Now, see, early last year we met, early last year, a lovely young fellow known as Ram from Nepal. Left home just after the second baby was born. And lovely, everybody loves him because he is that sort of a nice young man. And he's a... By his faith, he's a vegetarian. So after some time, we discovered that he wasn't getting food. He couldn't even really eat the vegetables on the plate because there might be meat gravy on or something, you know. There wasn't any... You meant to just go one way, you know. So then, about the middle of last year, I'm not sure when, perhaps early, I said, well, look, we could bring him some food that will keep without refrigeration, like vegetables or fruit, you know, and he carrots and cucumbers. That's what he liked, and so I'd take them, and so would other people, but then this year, I think it was before Christmas, the laws changed again, and When you go to visit, you take something a bit nice to eat, if you can, you know, and also healthy stuff, because I don't imagine the diet's very good. So previously, until recently, if the, whatever food was left, you'd say, well, would you like to take the apples? Would you like to take those biscuits? You know, and they took, but that now they can't take anything to their room. So we take, we have to eat up what we
take,
bring, or we take it home again or something. Mm. But so Ram, I think, I'm not quite sure. Ram was terrible last week when we went. He didn't appear for a while. He looked like death warmed up, and it was very sad. Oh, you know, I don't. It's you know, it's hard. It's not good. It's very bad. Poor chap. And that means also. Oh, so since only, I don't know, 3 weeks back, it was announced that after a certain date they will not be allowed to have mobile phones. So which means they can't ring you and say, I'll look forward to coming on Wednesday, and they can't ring their family, and the family, I reckon the family are going to think they've died because the family won't hear.
Mm.
You know,
so they won't have access to any phones?
Oh, no. We don't do things like that.
Mm.
No, it's very, I don't know. Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, but they're very appreciative, I'd have to say that. But and we have to book now, and you can only book between 9 a.m. and 1 on weekdays, and you can only have 6 people. Now, maybe that's 2 of you and you can have 4 detainees, and sometimes you're not even allowed, this is your table, you're not allowed to talk to the people at that other table sometimes, but that varies a bit. It depends who's the officer. Sorry, you've got a whole lot of it now. There are wonderful people like Pamela Kerr. You've probably heard her name. She's retired from work, but in some ways she's probably working harder because she can do more to do with the fellows. And I mean, there are some women.
Detainees.
Some, yes. But I don't think I've really ever made close to some of us of our group have. And they're probably mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And if... and all the different rules about if you come on a boat... Well, you can't go to onshore. You can't be on the onshore place.
Yeah.
And if you go to Nauru or Manus and you have some illness, you'll be shipped over here just to get yourself fixed up. And then you'll be sent back, and people all hope and kind of pray that they won't have to go back there. So it's a terrible mess.
It is a terrible mess. What other groups are you part of here? In Ballarat,
not a lot, because this takes
takes up a lot of your
more than enough.
I could see with the table here without reading the emails
the
books
and
yes, you're heavily involved.
Well, yes, but one thing leads to another, and anyway, I suppose as far as we go, we're not specific. I don't see us as a fundraising group, but we do need to have some fundraising because there's a family here who are with no work rights, and 3 little girls. Well, the youngest one's just gone to kinder yesterday, and they've got no right to work, so they don't have a cent. So there were supposed to be 4 organisations that who would pay the bills, but things don't always work out quite like that. But what was I just going to say?
Fundraising.
We're caring for people, whether they're inside or whether they've got a visa. But nobody's got any visas for a couple of years. Just nobody in Australia.
Mm.
Yeah. So
what's the situation with this family here in Ballarat?
Well.
So do they have refugee status?
Oh, no. They don't have any status.
So
they're non-existent. They don't exist even in the...
So how are these people in Ballarat not in detention? Why is that the case?
Oh, I see, yes. Well, I don't think I can answer that. They came through a Christmas Island, which is fairly common.
Mm.
Not much time there. Then to Darwin, And I think, as far as I know, they were in detention in Darwin, and then the third baby was born there. And then I don't quite know, but there is such a thing as a community detention.
Detention,
yes. I mean, that's a status. Mm-hmm. They don't have status of any kind, you know. Mm. So they all came to Victoria, and the dad wasn't terribly happy with the part of Dandenong they lived, and so he got a map out and he looked at Ballarat, and they're happy as happy. They're happy here, except that there's no certainty. They could be gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
they're totally reliant on various community groups. Yes, to... Yeah. And from what country is he?
They're from... they're Tamils from Sri Lanka.
Okay.
If they weren't Tamils, they'd be in a different... They'd get on differently.
Mm.
Tamils are bad people. Well, I don't say that, but that's what the opinion is. The only other thing I do really is the Rebel Elders, which I love.
And what are the Rebel Elders? What's that about? Tell us about that.
A few years ago, I met up with a young artist through a niece of mine, and the young artist was starting this group, and I don't think she was too sure what she was going to do. But each year you put on some sort of a presentation, and the first year was meant to be linking the aged people. You don't have to be over 80, but there are people older than me, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, so mixing the aged people with the young musicians, and Ballarat's full of lovely mm-hmm. young musicians, but it was sort of okay, but it was the first go. I can't think what we did the second time, but the third one we joined in 24 hours, if you know what I mean, something that's going on in Ballarat, and Rose will say, we could do that, you know, and so we're trying to, I suppose we're trying to mix people a bit, so that last year or the year before we had was the 24 hours, and so we decided, we walked around and looked at old, it had to be in an iconic sort of historic venue somewhere around, mm-hmm. and so we looked at places, and we ended up with under the tunnel that goes under the railway line,
mm-hmm.
and then we decided, then we kind of linked refugees into it, because it was me and Rose doing it, and she's very much a supporter too,
mm-hmm.
and so it was the light at the end of and the tunnel, you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. That was good, and it was good fun. This year, now we're in White Light.
Oh, okay.
You see, which is and it's the first time for Ballarat, so we're really pleased that'll be in Ballarat, a certain one in Ballarat, and our part of it will be in Melbourne as well, I think, somehow. So it doesn't... I suppose it's something I like doing, but... and I don't have to plan anything. Do you know what I mean? I just go to this event.
They're all 80 plus year old people, or
yes, oh, maybe some. No, I don't quite know. But the one man's going to be 96 in a week, mm-hmm. or so. He's probably the eldest, and I think there's another 90, and I don't really know. Like there's a one person could even be not about 70-ish,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a couple. Of them. It's not a limited thing, and somehow.
And you're active in
acting out something that you're not too sure what you're doing about something. Now, what we've done this time, and it was Rose's idea that the camera would be on the floor, and the picture that people will see makes it look as though we people can stride up or something. Not that I move in mine. We're allowed to choose individually what we'd like to do. And I, having been brought up in the northeast climbing hills, I said, oh, I'd like to be on Mount Feathertop. What's Mount Feathertop? Well, I told him it was my mother's and auntie's favourite mountain, you know, so hill. And so it was. I got filmed last Friday.
Right.
And
And so that's going to be projected up onto a building.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
I don't know too much about it, Brian, but which I don't have to do it. I just, you know. But,
what, you were elected Ballarat Citizen of the Year.
Mm.
What does that mean for you? Why? What do you hope to achieve in your year?
I hope to achieve make some progress to do with refugees, naturally, because that's my passion, and maybe to find more people who say, oh, I didn't realise they're nice people, you know. Mm-hmm. I've raised their status a bit, and I mean, I'm not sure whether I'm too optimistic, but I'd like to think there's a bit of change, even a crack in the government, you know what I mean? Not that I'll be doing much special, I don't know.
Have you spoken to schools or at schools? Or
no, I haven't.
Are you comfortable, would you be comfortable speaking to school groups, large or small?
I would be pleased to. Oh, I did go, some years ago, Loretto asked me, I think it might have been the particular teacher at the time, and I went there a few times, and they were very attentive. They were seniors, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be seniors, probably. They wouldn't want me saying some of the things to small children, I suppose. No.
Oh, secondary schools would be able to cope with the conversation you're having today.
Mm.
Secondary school students are very...
Oh, yes. Mature.
Mature, yes. Really. Very attuned to issues of the day.
Yes.
So, Sarah... Mm. Who is our driver in the community newsletter, is actually going to the secondary school over by the Caledonian, well, it's called Woodmans Hill Secondary College now, or campus.
Mm. Mm.
She's going to speak with them tomorrow and hopefully link into that school. So I would hope in the future we may, if you wish to, have an invitation to speak to...
Mm.
The school in some capacity, but that would be something that hopefully Sarah will be able to liaise. And the secondary school students are actually going to take this digital recording and we'll turn it into some form of a an article, hopefully.
Yeah.
So that's our wish.
I'm very impressed with that because, I mean, suppose I've got 10 grandchildren, and they're so much more mature than my children were at the age, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, here's a difficult one for you. What do you think in your lifetime to this point, what are some of your greatest achievements? I don't know whether anyone's ever asked you that. It might be family. It might be something that you do outside the family.
My husband had died before I was 49, and in the early 40s, I think. And I got to be 49, and I thought, if I don't climb Feathertop before I'm 50, I'll never do it. So I thought, well, how can I do that? Well, I had a friend who had some children the same age as mine, so the two of us went off. And my brother, who was a bit of a character, and he lived in Bright, so he went up and down lots of times, you know, and he wrote some important things for us, like keep walking, no talking, you know, because he knew what friends are like, and then there was something as you don't know that area perhaps, Feathertop cannot be reached except on foot or on horseback. And so we were going up what was called the bungalow trip, which was very long, and you're among trees. It's lovely, but it did take a long time. So you got to a place where you could go across there if you wanted to go to Mount Hotham, or you could go up there to the peak of Feathertop. So Kevin, my brother, said, leave that at 1 o'clock. Well, we only got there at 12 o'clock. So we had to decide whether... I said to them, now, kids, by that time my friend had gone back because her son wasn't managing, and, you know, so there was just... I think I had one girl of hers and my own family, but I felt a bit responsible because you have to be careful you don't go down the wrong
track.
The wrong track. It's the wrong peak, you know. So we succeeded. So that was a big. And then after that, I don't know. Perhaps we went three times that way, but by then I was remembering my mother, who'd long since died, talking about the razorback. And I thought, oh, the razorback, it'd be probably something quite like that. Wouldn't be hard to walk there. But when we got to it, it was like this.
Uphill and down dale.
No,
I didn't. Narrow.
So, but that became the better way to go. And so I took friends, some from here, some from Charlton. When I say I took them, I organised it. And we walked up and back in a day. So I didn't get, I didn't achieve... Well, one thing which I would like to have slept a night somewhere up there.
Up there.
But that didn't happen. But not, that was good. I'm really excited about kind of being offered this opportunity of being, because people everywhere are knowing me and applauding me, and, you know, going to the little shop in Peel Street and, so... I mean, this. In whatever group, whatever work you're doing, not everybody is going to be happy about it. So my story is no different from that. So to have all this public say, oh, it's good, it's good, it's good, that's a big thing for me. I mean, I felt it before, but I suppose I haven't.
It's given it a far higher profile.
Yes.
Which, you know, I think... possibly through, well, anyway, even this article, because I'll ask, you know, what a contact for you, one that you're, you know, if people wish to have any involvement with the refugee area, how would they contact you? What's the easiest form of contact?
I see.
For you?
Oh, phone. Yes,
phone?
Yes.
Are you happy to receive phone calls?
I don't say yes to anything I can do, because I suppose you get so connected to these people and you feel so sad, and it helps you to feel how lucky you were. I said that I was born in Australia, you know, but I say to people I might have been born in Syria, you know. I don't say no. So I'll give you my card when I think where I'll get it from.
That's okay. Yep.
I'll get it right now, otherwise you might go without it. Now, talking about schools, I've been really pleased to go into schools.
Okay, well...
You know, and I mean, I've sort of...
That'll be something that we'll put in the article, that you're happy to speak to any groups. So you'd be happy to speak to any, you know, like Lions or like... community group. You'd be quite happy to be a guest speaker.
We haven't managed that at all. I suppose the people that are in the group haven't been people who are in service clubs, you know, groceries or those things.
Yep.
So we haven't got in there at all.
Yep.
The other thing is to perhaps be good if the people knew had a question or something, you know, or two some questions. So, I mean, I don't want to ramble around for too long and not tell them much, you know.
Yep. So helpful. That would be a good idea if... If you're going to talk to a class or a couple of classes, that they generate some questions, get them to you beforehand, you could then organise to go to the school or the class and then respond.
As I could. I don't promise I know everything by any means.
Oh, you don't know everything. Fantastic. What sort of a message... would you like to give younger folk, you know, the secondary school age students, younger folk in the world, about refugees or about the way they're treated? What sorts of message?
Something, I'll answer this, perhaps not your question, but I'll answer it a bit differently. A lady who spoke to me recently and came with some money to give to the family, because that's okay. Like, they don't have a bank, but that helps them. So she said, oh yes, she said I think she was really thinking about Muslim women, mm-hmm. and she said, oh, when I'm in Sturt Street or anywhere, she said, whenever I see anyone like that or someone who obviously wasn't born here, she said, I say, it might be the women she's talking about. Good morning. You look just lovely. You know. So, we have a something, but it's not we really. 10 minutes on Voice FM, and it'll be tomorrow morning. So, the chap who runs it's lovely, but he likes to know what questions he'll ask me so that it'll all work. Mm. So one thing I'm planning to do tomorrow is to put in something. It's only a very short time, but I want to put in something about when you see someone you think might be someone new to our country, you know, give them a smile and say good morning or good afternoon. Well, that's a little message I'm planning on, you know. Hmm. And I did something the same. I see that when I was invited to, and when I was in the town hall, at the event, the big event, and knowing that if I got in, I had to make a speech.
Oh, yes.
And so I had to have something ready. And I hummed and hawed for days, what would I do, what would I talk about. And in the end, I chose what I'd say, but I couldn't trust my memory. So I just got up there with the book and give you a bit of a glance on. I wasn't sure how it was all going to go over, but I began by saying we all come from families and we have friends, and sometimes those friends need extra support. And I said, this is why I'm going to tell you what I'd like to say, or something like that. And I said, and it's the same with refugees. So now I should have my glasses on. No, that's not the page. A few years ago, some students at Catholic University here were encouraged to link up with some community group to find out a bit more about how it would be when they became community people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so these two girls chose refugees, and because most of the other people had other commitments, I was the one who benefited, because they came every Monday. I didn't have to prepare a word. They just asked all their questions and I answered them, and this is what came out. It's fantastic. So, here we are. So this pillars of support, I've got some bookmarks that will be made in ready in a couple of days with those. And I just spoke about, I carried the book with me, like it wasn't really the way you do things on when you're supposed to be speaking. But I made, anyway. So that's...
And the TRAP program, this was the Refugee and Asylum Seeker program.
Yes, well, that's a make-believe.
Right.
Do you see what I mean? And
yes.
They planned it. I mean, it was very good. And I remember when we got there for the launch of all these things, the other students said, oh, Sean and so-and-so was so lucky that they had you, you know. So, well, but I learnt a lot from it. But I don't know where they are now, so I can't even... I'd like to meet up with them.
And see whether they've, in fact...
One of them did go teaching. They were teachers' students, but I'm not sure whether they both became teachers.
Oh, okay.
But that book was fantastic. Yeah. And I suppose... I mean, that's not my personal book.
Yep.
It's the group's book, I suppose.
Yep.
But then, you know, it's not
being Sean used Hardy very much. And Soraya Sharp McKee, the Ballarat Circle of Friends. That was the group.
That was what we were called at this stage.
At that point.
Yeah. But I mean, I could talk about some other things. It depends. Yeah. You know, some people might want to know, you know, what goes on in a detention centre. Or
I'm sure that, yes, I'm sure.
Something like that. I mean, I think I could handle that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, see, I used to be a very shy person. Very shy.
Find it hard to believe.
Well, it's true. It's true. And I don't know. And even when I first went to refugee meetings, because I'm not, I suppose living alone is part of it, I wouldn't know much about, a whole lot about politics. I knew less further back. I don't know that much now. Mm-hmm. But I used to keep quiet and I wouldn't speak at meetings. But so it's more recent. But once you feel you've got knowledge, well, I'm pleased to share it with people.
Knowledge is empowering, isn't it?
It is. Sorry, I've talked a lot, but I hope it hasn't led you astray.
Have you really?
Oh, well, I do.
Yes, the first I said to Sarah today when I picked up this recorder, I said I spoke to Kath yesterday or the day before, and I think she's a lady that could talk underwater. I don't think having a chat will be a problem. And I said, Sarah, it would be interesting. Sarah's a great chatterer
she's
as well.
Lovely,
she's very very easy to talk
very
to.
Skilled. Yeah.
She is. She's. I'm not an interviewer, but she's a very skilled and she's a lot of enthusiasm. Young and enthusiastic. Mm. Yes, mm. Young and enthusiastic.
Oh, yes, she's great.
So what are you going to do when you retire? I like asking people of your vintage that.
Yeah.
So do you drive?
Well, not at the moment.
Last year
I had a very bad... I learnt driving a bit later than some people.
Yes.
And when I came here, I didn't drive to Melbourne, you know, and that didn't matter, sort of. And then...
So you bus from here, do you, to get around, or...?
At the moment I'm ringing up people and saying, please can you take me?
Yeah.
And it's awful, really. And I made a list of them the other day so that I won't ask the same person too much. But I'm hoping I'll get back to it. But the beginning of last year I had a skin cancer just there on the ankle, which took ages and ages and ages to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And then soon after that, later than that, I had cataract surgery. And then it was Christmas. And then just after Christmas, a lady took me shopping, a lady with a health problem. And I said, oh, I've got a big long list, you know. And she said, oh, take your time, take as long as you like. Mm. But... it was a hot day. She didn't stay inside the supermarket. She got her bit of shopping and we sat in the car. By the time I came out, she's really mad.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, she had to bring me home. So I managed to get up and unlock the door and get back to... No, I didn't get back to her. I turned around the corner, the front door, and went flat on my face. Like with my arms like that, I don't know why they were like that, but it was fantastic that they were, because nothing got broken. Yeah. So my daughter, the eldest, she's decided, you know, that I'm going to fall over every second day or something like that. It's right. It's very difficult. Yeah. So she doesn't live here, but she'll come again soon. I don't mind. She's got all sorts of suggestions, like you do this and you do that, and there's some course at one of the hospitals, and I might do that. But then one young lady said to me, oh, you didn't break any bones, Kath. Well, that's because you're pretty tough, you know. And I thought, well, probably it is, you know. And I suppose, you know,
you're reasonably active too.
Yeah, I'm reasonably active and I eat all right and... Yeah, so now I don't know what I'm not sure what I'm going to do about retiring.
I don't think you'll ever retire, will you?
Well, not if I can help, if I can manage that, that's what I'll do. But the thing, difficulty is, who's going to carry on after me?
Well, that's the trick. That's why you need to. I won't tell you what you need to do, but the more you're able to speak to the younger generation, I'm sure you only need to spark one or two, and that's where the interest grows from, because you will impact on some, you know, on some students and possibly some staff. So that's in the school situation, and you know, the more you're able to talk to outside groups, it's a broader and you have you have the ability this year, particularly seeing as you've been
chosen,
you're the chosen one in regards to the citizen, the Ballarat citizen, Australian citizen of the year. It gives you a platform to speak to people. So,
no, I'll be pleased. I'll be very pleased to that. There is a young man who's, I think he was born in Ballarat, but he's been a student, and I'm not sure whether he's partly a student and part, no, he's quite not, or something. But he, I had to give him a message this morning, and we talked about something we could do, which needs to be something we need to do, a public thing. And oh yes, well, if we do that, Kath, well, I'm prepared to do the organising. Oh, I said thank you, because that's what we don't have any organise. You don't have many organising people, you know, and you don't have passionate people, and you know, I suppose it's a bit. So it's a bit it is isolating, but then, you know, I've got Frieda, haven't I? You know. So he looks a possibility, you know, because I mean he's got a wife and children, so he's not going to move away from Ballarat, but not for the time. So he's and he and I get on very well. So so I'm really pleased, because that means. He said, you come with the ideas and I do the work. And I thought, oh, I felt like putting a notice up on the wall, you know.
So what value, how do you see community? Like, you know, part of our newsletter, it grew out of wanting to inform community. You know, our newsletter... is delivered inside the Brownhill
area.
Yes. And you know, part of our reason for doing that was to try and give people an opportunity to see what happens in
Brownhill, in
the Brownhill area, give people a voice. One of my initial interests and how I got involved really was I wanted I wanted to know of businesses in Brownhill, people that own a business who live in Brownhill, and businesses that are in Brownhill. So effectively a trade directory. So that was an interest for me. I live in Brownhill and I needed a plumber. And I thought, I have always liked to give the smaller person a go, the local person a go. And I struggled to find, like, without a lot of work, trying to find
who
they were. So that was one of my primary drivers to get involved with the newsletter. And last, the fourth edition, we actually inserted a community group. You know, so we've listed, I don't know, about 100 community groups and various businesses.
100 community groups
in Brownhill.
In Brownhill.
And businesses, either businesses that are physically in Brownhill or the owners of the business live in Brownhill, because we felt we wanted to sort of capture all of that. This, you know, the council has funded the group. You know, we've had $100,000. This is the second year we're starting, and we've our newsletter has been funded. A barbecue area down at the just behind the hall on the footy oval's been funded. There's been funds into Russell Square.
And is that because you're people from that area ready to do work? You're ready to.
Well, there are 18 of us in the group at the moment, or about 18 that meet bi-monthly, probably, and and trying to. Eventually, the council will pull back out of the organisation, and hopefully leave a core group in Brown Hill. I hope it will be personally, me speaking, it will be based around the Progress Association, because that group is already in place. So it actually auspices the newsletter. We sort of fit under their umbrella for legal reasons, really, in a lot of ways. There's a big effort, and Sarah was involved with the first Brown Hill Festival, which won the award, which won the Australia Day Award. So that was hopefully, you know,
a very good start.
It's a good start. I'm involved with the Brown Hill and District Lions Club, and we, you know, we have the Australia Day barbecue down at the Brown Hill Hall, or at the back of the hall. So that's, you know, that's a, you know, there are about 300 or 400 or 500 people down there for Australia Day barbecue and activities. So, you know, I personally think communities, you know, very important in our lives. And obviously, you do as well.
I do, but that doesn't always work, you know. But the other thing I was trying to say, I feel quite embarrassed because the letter came in my letterbox, and I just, and you know,
oh, the newsletter.
Yes, your newsletter.
Yeah, it's interesting up here because. Technically, you're not in Brown Hill.
Oh, aren't I?
I don't think so.
Oh, because I'm on this side of the road.
I think technically, I suppose you're in Narina.
Yes, it is officially Narina.
Narina.
This side in, I suppose. Perhaps both sides are.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I'll read it now, you see. I suppose I'm saying, you know... maybe there are other people like me who'd say, oh no, I don't know about that, you know. But it's a good thing to be doing.
Well, it's informing. We're trying to introduce Brown Hillites to people in Brown Hill, or, you know, there'll be, hopefully there'll be an interest in reading, you know, some of the issues that you've brought up, and your interests and your passion. You're obviously very passionate. You've been involved for tens of years, many, many years.
I was. I suppose, yes, I don't quite know how. I've been trying to work out why didn't I take that sort of justice position, you know, and all I can think is that my dad had a previous marriage, and his wife had died, and he had... before I came in, I was the beginning of the second mother, you see. And he had two boys and a girl, and one of them, even when I was a kid, I remember that he paid $600 for that boy to buy a legal practice in Swan Hill, and it was so much money. And something. But then the second boy didn't get the... The second boy did do something to do with legal. So, you know what I mean? That's the only sort of connection I can think with justice. But when I was a kid, my mum and dad were community people. He was the Shire Secretary.
Oh, okay.
And my mother didn't have much choice, but I think she enjoyed it, you know. I mean, she had to be on the hospital when we got the Bush Nursing Hospital going. You know, she had to run a women's scrub club.
And whereabouts was this?
This is Bright.
Oh, okay, in Bright, okay.
Yeah. And so we didn't grow vegetables. We weren't those sort of people, you know. And every Christmas, a lady who we knew quite well lived up the street, and her husband had a little bike shop. And anyway, so every Christmas she would come with what we used to call a school case, and she'd open it up, and it had the eggs were all, no, the beans were like that, and they'd all been washed, and the eggs were like that, and the lettuce and all that. Well, I was very worried because I was brought up Catholic. And at that stage, I was really very worried because she wouldn't go to heaven because she wasn't a Catholic. You see what I mean? Yeah. And I said that. Who did I say that to? Oh, somebody interviewed me the other day at the Catholic Diocesan office. I'm not really especially connected there, but I didn't mind. I don't mind my story getting told, you know.
Yes.
And I said that to the girl, and the girl looked at me, she said, what do you mean? Why wouldn't that lady, what was wrong? And I said, no, you're younger than me. I said, fortunately, you grew up in better times. But, so that was the beginning of it, and there was a man, a separate person, not connected with the lady, and he was the counsellor, and he was such a good fellow, and so, but he was a Mason, so he wouldn't get there either. So that's the beginning of my story. And I suppose you see things that the way you've been treated in some things too, so that sort of builds it in you. Yeah. However, thanks very much for listening to me. You don't have to go. I'm just grateful for you to never have seen me and be prepared to put up with all my talk.
It's not a passion, but I just think, unfortunately, that unless things are recorded or documented, they're lost. There are some very wise people around, whether they're 25 or, 85, and we were going to get Eric Carthew interviewed. Eric Carthew is a Brownhillite, but unfortunately, Eric Carthew, he had a service station just in Water Street. And, there for 50 or 60 years, and unfortunately passed away perhaps 2 months ago. And he is somebody that, we'd spoken about, and, we need to get around and get these people interviewed, and because they've got wonderful stories to tell, and when they pass on, they are lost, or a lot of it is lost. And
it's history.
It's history, and a lot of it's lost. It puts how we live today in context. And hopefully some of the students from Woodman's Hill will take up the opportunity to interview some of these folks. There are local identities in Brownhill that have got a lot to offer. Eddie Borden is a former shopkeeper. He's lived in Brownhill for 50 plus years. More than 50 years. And there are many others. The Wilson fraternity. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting. You chat very easily, and I hope you get the opportunity to speak to many, many groups over the time that...
Yes, I'd be pleased to, because, I'm in hope, and I've said to two people I met at the detention centre, I know a young lady who comes at 4 o'clock, the same day when we're leaving at 4 o'clock, and she's a lawyer, I think, and she will come and do some legal stuff with the people. And I said... Marie, if you've got any suggestion, please, feed them to me, because I said, otherwise I won't be, I won't be fed by, I don't have other ways of getting fed, but I do, having met up with your group, you see. Yeah.
Well, hopefully this will give you an opportunity, and I know with Sarah on the case, other opportunities will come your way.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I must say that, the councillor inviting me to something, I don't know how often it's going to happen. But there's no obligation, and so I didn't even apologise for the first thing. I'm trying to buy some, the little white cards like that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're bigger than that. You could write a little note on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I searched two places this morning and can't find them. So I don't know. They might be in a gift shop. A friend is perhaps he might look around shops, or... I just want to have a little card like that that I can say, thank you, sorry, I'm not able to come, or something. And I've never been a typist, so my computer work is not good at all. And, I had a really bad time last year when I couldn't see properly.
You may well be able to organise something online and get something printed with your name and a message on it. at not a huge cost.
Oh, I see what you mean. So that the blank paper would have my, no.
Something similar to that.
Hmm.
With a message on it. So you'd be able to get that printed. This is something that we might be able to organise through the secondary college even.
Mm.
You might get somebody that can design you say something twice that size with your contact details and a message on the bottom.
Oh, yes. Oh, you mean like with a thank you or something?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Yes, except if it's a... it's a little bit like some of these letters we've got for the...
Or it could be a blank, yeah, like it could have your name and information and allow you to write something personal on it.
That's what I think is something I'm hoping to do.
Okay, know. Well, we might sell this group onto it as well.
Yeah.
They may be able to design something for you fairly easily.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again. I'll just check this and see, I hope, after all this time.
You hope you've got
yes.
some of it anyway.